Good evening. So as John said, Mike, that's Laura. Not that anyone was confused, I'm sure. But, you know, humbled to be here. I think if we kind of look at the chronology of things, I mean, just about 2 years ago, I walked in here for the first time myself. I sat in the back. I was the guy that was weeping hysterically all night. And then shortly afterwards, Laura came back here with me, and we kind of been coming since. A friend of mine kind of remarked the other day, he was up here for a conference, and he sent me a note, and he said, "What a gorgeous church you have." And I responded, and the only way I knew how, I said, "Yeah, and the building is pretty nice, too." So, first and foremost, I think for me, you know, what gets me all choked up is, you know, all of the folks that give up their time every single Wednesday night. Thank you guys so much. We wouldn't be sitting here without you guys. And the staffers, John, Susan, you guys are awesome. So, sorry. Brevity's not my thing. I apologize.
It's not, but we'll get started. So, pretty much how I grew up. I grew up in a strong Christian home. My parents have been married for 45 years. I'm the oldest of five. So we have four girls and one boy in my family. And I've always felt very lucky that I grew up in the home that I did. From birth, I was surrounded by a family of faith. If the church doors were open, my family, we were probably there. I decided to follow Jesus at age 7, and I was baptized shortly thereafter. And life looked great. It did from the outside. And my family has always been close-knit, and like I said, we were a Christian family, but that doesn't mean that we were a perfect family. So growing up, you know, we had a lot of financial issues in our family. My dad had left the corporate world and started his own business, and with five kids, that brings a lot of unknowns. And so I did see my parents argue many times, and while I knew that my parents were Christians and that divorce was probably never in the picture, as a child, I did get to see some conflict patterns. My dad was a withdrawer, so he would leave when they got in a fight, and my mom would be left behind to cry and to care for the kids. And I think from a young age, just seeing that pattern kind of created some insecurity within me. Not that I fault them for this, but just now looking back at how our my own marriage has examining my view of marriage through Reengage, I think that was probably a big part of laying the groundwork. And so I mentioned my insecurities. Around third grade, I became very, very insecure. Boys started teasing me, very specific teasing, and it just became me to be insecure about my body. So I was just at a young age, just had a very poor self-image. And, you know, being the oldest of five, I already had this perfectionistic tendencies and pleasing others and doing the right thing and being a role model. That was all very important to me. I experienced anxiety from a young age, and it just increased as I got older. The dangerous thinking pattern that I wasn't pretty enough or smart enough or skinny enough, it had been put into motion. So growing up, I threw myself into academics, athletics, music, and excelling in these areas brought me great validation for my feelings of success. However, the insecurities, you know, still lurked underneath, and keeping true to my personality, I became just a master at hiding that and just pushing those feelings deep inside. My journey with Christ continued as I attended Baylor University, and even though I considered myself a believer during my college years, I began to stray from Christ. My insecurities about myself, they started to manifest themselves through seeking validation through inappropriate relationships, and I did not honor God with my body, nor in many of my actions during that time. And these behaviors continued as I moved back to Dallas after graduation and just pretty much became heavily involved in the Dallas scene, as you would call it, I knew that as a Christian, my life was not honoring God, but I was just so still addicted to finding that immediate validation and gratification in my relationships and actions. In Psalm 149:13, it reminds us that I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made, and your works are wonderful, and I know that full well. And at that point in my life, I did not truly believe that, and I was not depending on Christ's love and love alone to fulfill me as only He can.
So, inversely to Laura, I was kind of brought up as a spiritual mutt. So my mom's side of the family, I mean, Jewish from the beginning of time. You know, praise God, my mom was actually baptized in that pond out front. If you don't think that God can do the unthinkable, yeah, He can. My dad's side of the family, I guess Catholic, kind of. They were kind of creasters. If anybody's familiar with that term, they go to church on Christmas and Easter, and that's kind of the cadence that we took growing up. You know, going to church for us was about kind of creating the image rather than having a strong connection to Christ. So I was in the youth choir, you know, at the right church that was, you know, hand selected by my dad. We sat in the right place during church on Sundays when we would go. You know, and I think that, again, it had a kind of a larger context there, right? And I think much of our childhood was crafted and deliberately managed to portray an image to the outside world that was very perfect and ideal. Yet, you know, if you kind of looked inside the house, it was far from. My childhood and early adulthood was a real tough ride. I was a late bloomer who got used to being the smallest kid in the class. Even still, I made friends very easily and was popular primarily because of my ability to kind of be a chameleon and to be self-deprecating. I excelled at both competitive athletics and academics, but this was never enough for my dad. He's very critical, but you know, we've kind of redefined our relationship the older I've got. But even still, every time that we play golf, he never takes he always takes the opportunity to critique my swing. I'll fast forward through that part. So on the flip side, my mom was very loving and nurturing and was always highly supportive of me. She gives very freely of herself, often at the expense of herself. After 25 years of witnessing a very difficult and unhealthy marriage, my parents did get a divorce during my sophomore year of college. You know, this numbed me really, really harshly when it came to relationships. And from there, I mean, I'd always, you know, I'd had girlfriends and whatnot, but, you know, they were generally kind of healthy relationships, if you call, you know, kind of puppy love healthy. But from there, you know, the numbing effect, I mean, I went, you know, kind of full bore into inappropriate relationships and you know, seeking out women became kind of a... kind of an opiate for me, and not only did I get satisfaction out of it, but I felt validation through that. So you know, lived for the party, ran hard after the world with a fun group of guys, and I justified all throughout by thinking, hey, I'm a good guy, and I do good things for people.
So one Friday night in March of 2004, my roommate and I had met up with a group from college at a local bar. And almost immediately, the guy next to me, whom I didn't know, he was the one guy in the group, I didn't know who he was, spilled his beverage all over me, all over my shoes, ruined my shoes, they were new, and didn't even apologize. So I just thought, wow, this guy is something else. And so I made sure he knew, no uncertain terms, that was extremely rude, and you should have apologized. Anyway, so I eventually got over it. Got new shoes. And this guy named Mike, or Fish was his nickname in the group. We had all kind of formed this group, and we, you know, would meet up, and he and I would find ourselves talking. And so finally, we kind of realized that I think we might be more than friends. And so Mike asked me if he could call me, and the next day he really did. And then we went, we had our first date shortly thereafter, and we were inseparable from that point on, literally. One characteristic of Mike's that intrigued me from the very moment, I mean, even though I was mad at you for spilling your drink all over me, but the more I got to know him, it intrigued me that he was extremely picky and just impeccable in his taste, in all things from fashion to cars. And so my deep desires to feel validated and worthy kind of finally materialized, and I felt just so special that I was the one girl that he wanted to date. And so against my family's wishes, we decided to move in together after 3 months of dating. And our relationship was rocky from the very beginning. Because of my insecurities and poor self-image and eagerness to please, I just became pretty much a passive participant in the relationship and would do anything to keep him and to keep him happy. My biggest fear was just that he would wake up one day and realize that I was not pretty enough, good enough, and that he would just leave me. And we would go to church every once in a while, but we did not have a church home. And I knew that we were living in sin. And I was convicted about that. But needless to say, Christ was just not in the center of our relationship.
Yeah, so frankly, I don't remember the night that we met. I was pretty good at sinning at that point. I'm not ashamed at this point to admit it. I do, however, remember us kind of meeting up at Cinco de Mayo shortly afterwards, and I truly fell in love with her across the table. The obstacle at that point was that she was dating a good friend of mine at the time. And, you know, the good news is after a conversation I had with him, and I kind of gave him two choices. I said, you know, be a cool friend, break up with her if this isn't for you, or two, you know, stay with her, and I'm just going to embarrass you with my game, which I think my game was pretty pathetic at that point, but I thought it was pretty good. So as luck would have it, he chose number one. And, you know, as Laura described, our relationship from there kind of developed very quickly. I was in love with her, and there was nothing that was going to stop from anyone from making her mine. I was going to put my head down and blow through any barrier in our way. So when spending time with family, we almost exclusively chose to hang out with my family, who, you know, because of the kind of, you know, the progressive, I guess you can call it, progressive kind of lifestyle. You know, my family, I come from a divorced family. They were more accepting of, you know, us living together and all of that. And I think that gave us a little bit of validation. They didn't judge us living together. They, you know, and for the most part, my family enjoyed lifestyles that were, you know, focused on worldly possessions. And we sought to emulate all that. So very soon after we moved in together and kind of moved down the path towards marriage, our relationship started to get much more difficult. What I once thought was a desire to never be apart from each other quickly turned into codependence and jealousy and greater expectations on my part. When those expectations weren't met, I would frequently become angry and verbally abusive. I'm a rotten guy, and I said a lot of rotten things that nobody ever should say to another person. And only through God can I say that Lord's forgiven me for those things. So nothing was ever good enough, and my criticisms over time became increasingly more frequent and abusive.
So fast forward to May of 2005, we became engaged, and I think we might have a picture of that night. Yeah. Mike was really sneaky about it, and he had the waiter take pictures, and so it was an exciting time, and we were married shortly thereafter on February 25th, 2006, so about 9 months later, not heeding my parents' wishes for us to slow down and wait, we rushed to the altar. I finally felt relief. I remember just feeling relief that we were now married, and he could never leave me now. However, my insecurities did not go away like I thought they would. In fact, they continued to get worse. The first 5 years of our marriage mirrored our rocky pre-married relationship perfectly. We had times of extreme happiness, but also extreme sadness. And fighting would just become a staple in our weekends. And over time, it became so severe that most Mondays I would go into work and I'd have swollen red eyes. And I just knew that at any moment I was going to be asked to come down to the office to receive divorce papers. I literally thought that almost every Monday. So not having Christ at the center, our relationship was just spiraling out of control so fast. In December of 2007, we got some great news. However, we were expecting our first child. And on August 20th, 2008, we welcomed our beautiful daughter, Maddie Sue, into the world. That was her when she was born, and I think we have a picture of her now as well, and there she is today. And so we knew that because of this little one, we had to change the dynamics of our relationship, and the fighting just had to stop. We had little ears listening. That's when we really started coming to Watermark and attending church more regularly, but unfortunately, we were still not putting Christ at the center. And in this, we totally failed. We now not only had different expectations of each other, but now we had different parenting views as well. And so that was a complete recipe for marital disaster.
Yeah, so Laura had mentioned kind of the divorce thing. I think she did have kind of a valid perspective there, because I think just about every time we got in a big fight, I threatened divorce. I don't think I ever really meant that I wanted a divorce. I think it was kind of more of a tool for me to hear a response from her that, you know, A, that she would kind of give up her position, whatever position that she was defending, and B, that, you know, I'd get the validation I was seeking from her that she didn't want a divorce. So it's kind of an odd kind of way to go about, you know, hearing from someone how much they mean to you. So I strongly believe that as long as I lavished Laura with gifts and things of that nature, that I was fulfilling my role as a partner. I didn't know what being a spiritual leader in the household was, and nor I think at that point did I really care. Mm-hmm. You know, but with Maddie now in the picture, I consciously knew that things had to change, lest, you know, we kind of repeat the cycle of my youth. But I really lacked any motivation or really tools to change.
So in September of 2011, we decided to take a very belated honeymoon to Maui for our fifth year anniversary, our wedding anniversary. And even though we had flown to the middle of paradise halfway around the world, our troubles were still there waiting for us. Fighting for most of the trip, we returned to reality with crushed spirits, and I returned with a very cold heart towards Mike. Deep down, I knew I loved him, but I just didn't feel like I could stay in our marriage the way it was. So upon returning from our trip, I secretly started to lay the groundwork to end our marriage. So I felt, you know, at this point, I felt broken and lonely and just defeated, and no longer felt like anything I did was going to make Mike happy. The emotions of once, you know, feeling validated and special had now just kind of rotted into a realization that nothing I did could please him. So instead of praying to God for healing and submission, I honestly began praying to God for a way out. I started seeking legal counsel to just lay this groundwork for what I anticipated would be an extremely messy divorce. I shut myself off totally emotionally to Mike and just built a wall around my heart. Having lost that sense of validation within my marriage, I went seeking for those feelings that I just so desperately desired and needed. And it wasn't long before I found exactly what I was looking for. And so during this time of brokenness, unfortunately, I entered into an affair with another man. I knew that what I was doing was wrong. But the addiction of feeling beautiful and worthy and just hearing those words that I so desperately had needed to hear in my own marriage, it was too strong. It was just that addiction. It was just too strong. So in early of 2011, I finally told Mike that it's over. And I remember that night so clearly. I was like getting out of the bathtub, I think. And I just said, and you had asked something about, do you want a divorce? And I just said, yes. And he just could not believe that because I had never answered that way. And I just, knowing about what I had been doing behind his back, at that point, I just thought, this can't be repaired anyway. I can't, this cannot be fixed. And so I thought divorce was truly the only option at this point because he'd never be able to forgive me. I didn't think he'd ever be able to forgive me. I kept the affair hidden until a couple weeks later when it was uncovered, as the phone bill included a massive amount of texting, phone calls, and seeing the hurt and pain that I was causing Mike was excruciating. And even though at this time, part of me felt validated in those actions. I knew as a Christian that this was not the behavior of a godly woman. And so just feeling so ashamed and convicted of my sin, I did end the affair. But I still was not convinced at this point that I wanted to remain in this marriage. So I made kind of a secret pact with myself to just get through the holidays. Just get through the holidays before taking any further legal action. And, you know, that year, Mike had just given me the greatest gift for Christmas. And while I wasn't ready to accept it at this point, he had given me the ultimate gift of grace. And, you know, Ephesians 2:8-9 says, For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not by your own doing, but it's a gift from God. And so, still feeling so ashamed and broken, I just didn't know if I could accept it, and or if I could trust him to really change. And how could our marriage ever recover from this?
So when Laura told me she wanted a divorce, it was kind of like, I'm sure most people in this room have been in a car crash or something like that before. It was kind of like time becomes elongated, right? Where that night seemed like 2 years. You know, and I begged and I pleaded and I bargained like I'd done 1,000 times before. But for whatever reason, I just kind of knew that she meant business this time. And that, I think that's what made it that much more powerful to me. So, you know, all of a sudden that reality of the event, right, the big D, the divorce that I'd curiously fantasized about for so long, you know, it was finally coming true. And, you know, rather than kind of embracing it like Laura had expected me to, I kind of rebelled against it. And at first I sought counsel from a variety of sources, you know, friends, family, etc. But it really wasn't until I narrowed the list down to a few people, and actually two great guys that I would lay down in traffic for. And they spoke to me not out of emotion and not out of, you know, concern for me, but they spoke to me through the words of Christ. And through that, I was able to start kind of to construct my thoughts and have clarity for the situation. So Romans 12:2 says, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what is the good, well-pleasing, and perfect will of God." So, you know, I was also kind of given the great counsel, guys, and this is the best counsel I can give anybody in their marriage. I think that, you know, I repeat it at least a dozen times a week. You know, if you're in a situation, first thing you do, draw a circle around yourself and focus on the person standing in the circle. And that's what I did. So rather than focusing on Laura's transgressions, you know, I focused on, okay, what was my culpability? How did I contribute to the situation? What did I do to drive her to that? So as I said, you know, I came to reengage by myself first. I went to therapy. I worked hard to show Laura something very different. I forgave her without restraint. Yet throughout all of this, I still had a very hard time turning the situation over to Christ. And I remember one of my good buddies, you know, he kept saying you know, every time you start feeling angry and every time that you start, you know, picking up, start wanting to pick up a drink or feeling compelled to pick up a drink or pick up a cigarette, whatever, pick up the Bible instead, right? Pray about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't until, I remember it was a Friday night and I'd found out that Laura was moving out the next day. And she didn't know I knew. But she went out with some girlfriends that night. She came back around 2 o'clock in the morning. She was living in one of the upstairs guest rooms at the time. And I remember when she went upstairs, and I knew it was final. And I remember I prayed out loud. And I said, Christ. And that was the first time for me. I mean, first time in my entire life. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't kind of know where to hold my hands when I prayed. But, you know, I prayed out loud to God. And I asked him. I said, I don't have this. I need you. You know, and I need you to you know, whatever is your will for this situation. You know, however you want to use this situation to glorify you, I'm cool with it. Psalm 9:10 says, those who know your name will put their trust in you, for you, Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you.
So the following day, I was actually calling the movers to schedule the move into the new place that I had already leased. And I felt this overwhelming just sense of conviction. And I can't even really describe it, but it was the kind of conviction where you hit your knees and you just can't help but just listen to what God is trying to scream at you. And at that point, I just felt him just screaming at me to hit the brakes. And I felt that ice around my heart just kind of begin to crack just a little bit. And so I literally hit my knees and I started praying. And I asked for forgiveness and for healing. And, you know, I prayed over Psalm 51:10 that just says, create in me a clean heart, O Lord, my God, and renew a right spirit within me. And just an overwhelming desire just came over me to fight for this marriage. And I can't even really explain it. It was just this overwhelming conviction, and I knew it was God.
So that afternoon, I was in the study group up at schools because I was in a grad program at the time, and I got a text from Laura that said she missed me. I was pissed. I was like, okay, so she's leaving me, and now she's texting me, meaning to text somebody else. This is like insult to injury. And I stewed on it, and then I got another one, and I'm like, "This is incredible." And then came the phone call, and you know, and in the phone call, you know, I could tell she was just shaking, and she said, "You know, I made a big mistake, and you know, I want to make it right." And I said, "You're going to have to give me the ride home to digest this." Mm-hmm. And you know, I think for me, it was kind of like I think the old me would have taken the relief, and it would have been that instant gratification. And we would have band-aided it, moved on. But I knew that this couldn't be a kiss-and-make-up moment. This was our opportunity to redefine our relationship. You cold?
I'm freezing. Sorry.
So we came to re-engage next Wednesday, and like I said, we didn't stop coming. Mm-hmm. God bless this place. We're reminded week after week that every couple struggles with pursuing oneness and sin in their own ways, and we were committed to each other to make this marriage great.
Mm. And so, yes, we had great leaders, our sort of the Rankins, which we're so blessed to have in our lives even today. And so today we serve in Merge, and which is our pre-married ministry here. And we're working daily on pursuing oneness. I mean, we still have issues and arguments. And I mean, we had kind of a rough weekend at the very end. I mean, we're not perfect. We still have some things to work through. But the thing is that we now have Christ in the center. And we have a great community around us of believers that hold us accountable and are there to help us when we need help. And so that just has made all the difference. And I still struggle with anxiety and insecurity. I mean, that comes up in our community meetings. And so I'm transparent about that. But knowing that you know, Jesus Christ is my Savior and that He can fulfill every single need, and He has given me all the tools that He wants me to have. That is just so awesome. Galatians 1:10 says, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I was still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." So I've now accepted that forgiveness and that grace from Mike and our Lord. And just through establishing clear expectations and asking how we can better serve each other, I think our marriage just continues to grow stronger.
Yeah. So as Laura said, I'm still a work in progress. I still struggle with anger. I still rely entirely too much on my own instead of leaning as much as I should into Christ. The good news, I no longer hold Laura the standard of perfection. I kind of Frankensteined together from selected characteristics of women that I've either met or seen in movies or whatever. I see her as my gift from God. I honor our marriage as Christ intends for us to honor it. Divorce is off the table, and we've kind of completely stripped it from our vernacular. We're really now living and pursuing a 1 Corinthians 13 type of marriage, right? And that's the blueprint, guys. Another big difference, this is a huge difference, guys. Surround yourselves with community, right? The enemy likes to get into those nooks and crannies of your life that nobody else can see, right? And if you're casting a spotlight, a light on those areas, and trust me, I don't like, you know, here's how a fight goes now. We get in an argument, Laura sends a text message to one of the girls in the community, and I see my phone ringing with one of the guys in the community. I'm like, do I really want to answer this call? I'm like, I just want to be angry right now. And then I answer the call. 5 minutes later, I'm begging for forgiveness.
Well, it goes both ways. We do the same. I mean, we're very open with our community group.
I think the three things that I could say to you guys in wrapping up, I mean, because I know John's going to give us a hook in a sec. So three things, right? Draw the circle. Focus on the person standing in the circle. Get in community. And this is like your community right now if you don't have community outside of this body. And the third thing is remove divorce off the tape. I mean, just strip it, right? Because that's not what Christ intends for us. You know, marriage is not, I love this, that you always say it, and it's kind of like my mantra. But Christ didn't intend marriage to make us happy. He intended it to make us holy. So live in that, right? And understand that. 2 years ago, right? And the math didn't work. The math, the woman that I love with all my heart, 0% of my time and the rest of my life with her. My daughter, 50% at most, if I've got a good lawyer. Right? And now plus one, because I'll share the secret. We got one on the way. We just found out.
I'm a pretty visual person, so we put together some verses. I don't know if we can throw the verses up, but just so if you're a visual person too, you can kind of just see a few that helped us along our way. But thank you so much for listening, and we wish you guys the best, and we really are praying for you to, as you pursue oneness tonight.